Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast, end of season edition. It is Wednesday. I am Kellen Olson. I am joined by Kevin Zimmerman. We have just returned to the office from exit interviews. A lot of people talked and said basketball words. We're going to say more basketball words now. How are you, Kevin?
Good. Apparently it was just a brief team meeting and then everyone went on their way. So that's very Igor of them. Nothing like intense sit-down, end-of-the-year interviews. It was more just go work hard this summer type stuff. That's where we are. Bigger news. The Suns, according to our own John Gambadoro, are about to hire Jeff Bauer, the former Pelicans, well, whatever they were. Wait, who was it? Not
Hornets and Pistons.
Whatever. Oh, my God.
Yeah, whatever.
And he's going to be senior VP of basketball ops for the Suns, and that's pretty much the news of the day. We didn't get really anything breaking out of speaking with players and stuff. We'll touch on that more, kind of wrap the season. But initial thoughts on Bauer, I don't know until we talk to him. It's hard to gather anything, but it seems like a status quo move. Would you disagree with that?
No, I agree. Obviously, the interesting part of this is that the job that he is going for, or not going for, that he is going to get, is the job that James Jones originally has been holding, Vice President of Basketball Operations. So he's a senior Vice President of Basketball. So technically, he could.
Yeah.
We have to Jones is announced as GM, but that's what we're all expecting, at least. That's where logic leads you down. I tweeted like a little mini thread about this when Woj originally had the story that he was under consideration. I believe that was on Saturday. And basically, this is about what we expected in every way. We expected something really stupid to come out of this whole interview search. And that stupid thing was Larry Fitzgerald sitting on interviews. And wow, you never expected me to be negative about Larry Fitzgerald in any light ever. But I respect Larry Fitzgerald as much as everyone else does in the Valley, like they should, but dog, he should not be in front office meetings for the Suns. He doesn't. Is he a part owner of the Suns? Like there's no. Are you trying to impress front office people? Is this a free agent pitch?
To me, it's weird because it's kind of like if Robert Sarver brought his son in or something to interview a GM or senior VP for basketball of basketball ops. Like, it's just like, why is it necessary? Why is it necessary that you're in the room, you're conducting business? I'm sure Fitz is not like, Robert, this guy's great. And Robert's like, yeah, I wasn't into it. But now that you said that, Larry, like, I don't think that's what it is. And I think it's just from covering the Cardinals, knowing that Larry Fitzgerald loves learning and loves putting himself into these business discussions, whether it be that or going to a business class at Harvard or wherever that was this past summer. So I don't think it's a huge deal from that, but it's certainly a weird look. And it kind of continues this same weird look of why James Jones is probably, from what we understand right now, going to be making more decisions, why Lance Blanks failed. Like, this is basically Lon Babby, Lance Blanks, and you hope that, as far as structure, and you hope that it's not as bad as Lance Blanks, like, struggling to operate a basketball team. Now, it's kind of flopped where Lance Blanks was not the guy who was, well, I don't know. Like, Bauer knows everything, like scouting. He grew up as a scout. He probably knows salary cap stuff. He can take all that stuff off James Jones's plate. But James Jones also doesn't have the scouting background that you should if you're making personnel decisions. That's where it's concerning to me. And that's why even Lance Blanks had that.
So Bauer is this it was going to be extremely shocking to me if they just brought Buckstein and Jones back and then in these roles, like they were both going to be general manager and then someone else was going to take the roles under them, or there was always going to be a scenario in which someone with a lot of experience was going to come in and be an integral part of the front office, and that's what this is. There isn't much to read from his time in Detroit and his time in Charlotte from what we can tell, or New Orleans, so that we can tell. It's hard to...
Now I got you saying it.
Yep. It's hard to say. That's a lot of... You can get in a lot of trouble just looking back and be like, this is a guy that did this, or this is a guy that traded that, and it's hard to say. So I'm coming in with a clean slate on him. He doesn't have an extremely negative reputation. Like, that's where you sound off the alarms for the Kevin McHale, Jason Kidds of the world. But with him, I'm not really there. The question now becomes, is he going to come in here and be running the team with James Jones? Are they going to be making decisions together, or is this ultimately going to be a thing where he is there to advise and there to help, but at the end of the day, it's always going to be James Jones's decision? At the end of the day, it's always going to be Robert Sarver's decision. Where does the power outline fall in this situation, which is why it gets tricky to talk about, but also the obvious thing is, of course, like, Sarver is going to have the last say in everything if he wants to. It just depends on when he wants to have it. And this move is somewhat logical. I like Jones staying on as GM, because the biggest fear I would have is someone coming in and blowing this thing up without even really knowing what they're blowing up. That's why I thought it was foolish to fire McDonough at that time, because why not fire him before the draft so the other guy can make the decisions in terms of the draft, or why not fire him? It was just a really dumb time to fire him for a majority of reasons. But Jones has been here and been a part of that decision-making process, like Bauer probably will, since 2017 when McDonough got his extension, and he knows what this team is and knows where he needs to address it and all these kinds of things. He's not going to have to take a couple weeks and adapt and kind of get himself acclimated. Bauer will, and since he's not going to be, we hope at least, or we think that he's not going to be the number one decision maker, that's good that Jones is staying. But with that being said, James Jones has now been in a front office for less than 2 years. That's his experience level, and that's just not enough to run a team.
I think when you read Kevin Arnovitz's story from, what, a month back, the good thing about the Bauer hiring is, all right, he's going to take care of that stuff. When people say, we didn't know, we couldn't get into contact with James Jones, like, that's concerning. Like, what if someone wants to, like, what if Rob Pelinka, now that Magic Johnson's gone, wants to trade LeBron to the Suns? Like, that's a very stretched imaginary thing. What if he's just like, I don't have James Jones's phone? He has Jeff Bauer's, like, contact information. He knows where to go at the very least, or an avenue to go. And I told you this, where it's at least you say, I hope Jeff Bauer goes to James Jones and gives him advice like, hey, let me be in charge of going and hiring a few more scouts. Let me be in charge of helping you and giving you the tools to do your job better. Because, like, you shouldn't be showing up at Fry's and buying people beer to put out a fire. Like, that shouldn't be your job. And the other concerning thing from that Arnovitz story was James Jones saying things like that. Like, I forgot the exact words, but it was, I never said I was going to be in this role. And that's kind of concerning. That's kind of like you're going down Magic Johnson territory. So I think James does have a level head, and I think I was impressed by the smart moves he made and probably the moves he didn't make, that we'll see if, and we'll never know what was on the table or what was possible, but he was very, like, stable basketball team.
We felt best go poop. we both
That's
said
like an era.
We both said our number one feeling going out of that was, man, I feel terrible for Jones, because from this is the again, just to reemphasize, a tricky part of talking about front offices and things like this is that we can judge players on the court for what they are and what they're doing and where their role has been and that kind of thing. but there's only so much we can read into that.
Yeah.
And this is front office stuff where it's just there is we only know what they are telling us, and that is it. We do not know anything else unless we have our sources inside with all the sauces. And even then, those sources are telling you what they want to tell you.
Yeah.
And not telling you what they don't want to tell you. So with that in mind, what we have heard from Jones and the way we have heard him talk about this team, yes, he had has had his moments when he said stuff where you're like, what did you just say? But for the most part, he seems very level-headed and very
thoughtful
and not concise, but he's kept it short where he's needed to kept it short with the team. And that's important to me, and I think that he seems like a guy that is capable of this job, which is going to be difficult. But at the same time, a lot of the hard work is already done. You already have the two talents that should get you to the playoffs within two seasons. You should be wins, not next season, of course, but maybe the season after that. These guys, Aiden's third year, that's the season I keep talking about, which is Aiden's third year and Booker's sixth. That's when you should really be looking at 40 wins, 45. And going there, and he seems to be treating it that way right now, which is good, because when McDonough got fired, me and you were waiting for them to trade four first-round picks for Terry Rozier, and I was just so worried about a panic trade for John Wall or something like that, because it just seemed like Sarver was grabbing the reins of this thing and saying, okay, we're done. We're done with this crap. And it's actually been the opposite. And that's frustrating to a certain degree, because it's like you guys say you're done with the rebuild, but you're in the middle of a rebuild, which is what you should be doing.
Yeah.
We've said different things at the beginning of the year, keeping Booker happy and so on, but I think the addition of Oubre, the way that they played, and we'll get into this in a little bit with our overall impressions of the season, I think they have actually done enough weirdly this season to show Booker that there is something developing here if he wants to stay and see it out.
Yeah, I think kind of petered out on it and just got tired of saying it. I think now we also see stability, and you can wait until that perfect moment when you can, like, if you have Mike Conley on the trade block at the draft and it costs, and they just want to continue their rebuild and it costs two first round picks and salary, like, probably I would say do it. And it's just it's upgrades like that where I think even if he doesn't really match a Booker Ayton timeline, it would be beneficial for them just to taste more winning and to grow and to have those voices in their heads more of a guy who's like that legit, who's a veteran. Like Jamal Crawford was great this year, but if you have Mike Conley kind of leading the ship and on the court that much, that's so helpful and teaches Booker and Ayton how to play with another talented player. So I'm just trying to say roundabout way, I hope we're not being hypocritical, because we're saying be patient now, but that kind of move still, I think, is on the table.
Yeah, it for sure is. Suns ended the season in Dallas last night. We're recording this on Wednesday. Feels rude calling it a clown car show, because it was Dirk's farewell. It was very touching. The crowd was going bananas every time he scored. The Suns could not stop him. And Dirk cannot jog anymore.
Yeah, he can't.
He can't move. And the Suns could not stop him. And I get Dirk is Dirk. But it was just watching the Suns being unable to stop him. And then the Suns actually going to double him and just continuing to switch on defense when it was like, dude, they're just running. Rick Carlisle is running two ball screens for Dirk because he knows he can get the point guard on him. And you guys aren't going to do anything about it because you have seven guys hurt or whatever. And that whole part was weird, and then it got into this whole thing in the fourth quarter where a certain element of Jamal is going for 50, and the Suns are now within five, and Dallas just being a nightmare in that old sense, too. And that whole game was just a big ol'. There's a metaphor somewhere in there about, like, eating crappy food or something like that, but it's like I enjoyed watching it.
It's like eating Taco Bell.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Well, I don't know your thoughts on Taco Bell. But
I love Taco Bell.
It's like
so
douse
much.
It in fire sauce.
Yeah.
Get me the Baja Blast Frosty thing. And like, I know this isn't good. It's not good for me, but enjoy it. So that'd be mine.
Am I going to eat all these cinnamon twists? Probably not, but I'm going to get some because I'm at Taco Bell. I need to get cinnamon twists. So it was fun to watch in the moment, and then there were, and it turned into a moment, which was the best part about it. But it also kind of encompassed the whole season, which is like, man, this has been a really, really long year. This has been...
At least we have that kind of thing over the alternative, which is the last, like, 2 years.
Exactly. And it was... This was the longest year of any of them, in my opinion, and call recency bias here or whatever, but I think this felt like the longest just because of how much turnover that happened in the season. Just comparing... Not even comparing starting lineups from the first game to the last game, but comparing starting lineups from when they actually had their, these are the guys we want to start every game, which didn't really happen that much. I think it was Aiden, TJ, Kelly, Devin, and D'Anthony. I think that was the five. And then Tyler Johnson's not even in there yet because he wasn't even on the team yet at that time. But you compare that to the opening night when it was Kanan,
10 years ago.
Kanan, Anderson, Ariza. That happened this season. That happened 4 months ago or 5 months ago, 6 months ago, whenever it was. So with that in mind, it was just one of those games to me where it was like, all right, this is a good note to end on, but man, I am very ready to be done with all these guys being hurt, all these guys moving in and out of the roster. I'm very ready for this season to hopefully be the last one where there's a bunch of roster movement and for them to just kind of move forward with 5, 6, 7 guys in particular, like selected. And none of those guys were on the court. Maybe two of them were, but Mikel was on the court, I guess. He counts as one for sure, but you get what I'm saying.
From a really wide angle view, I think we last probably addressed how this was going after they stopped losing a lot. But
this
how
meaning like the state of the team going forward and the future of it, yeah.
Do you feel optimistic after this whole year? Like 17 game losing streak, kind of rebounding from that, terrible ending with injuries, like where are you right now?
I'm as optimistic as you could be given the circumstances, and I don't think you can be optimistic with the Suns at all, so that's how I'll phrase it. But I am going to be the person who says, look, Kanan Anderson, Ariza, Tyson Chandler was on this team at the beginning of the year. Remember him? All of the trades, which, again, they were fine, and we didn't have a problem with them being executed, but just the amount of roster turnover already, half the players are new going into the season, and then you bring in Tyler Johnson, you bring in Kelly Oubre, you lose all those names, and then all the injuries start happening when you really start going here at the end of the year. Booker is going through something every 2-3 weeks, it seems like. DeAndre had... stretch at the end of this, at the end of the season right now, and then he had about a 10-game stretch, I think, where he missed, or 5-game stretch where he missed some games. Melton had the same thing. Of course, TJ Warren misses the last 33 games of the year. Kelly misses the last. It goes on and on. So with all of that in mind, I think the main goal for this year, the way I have phrased it numerous times now, is that this went from a year where you look to really gradually improve to a year where this is a transition year and you just need to figure out a couple of things. And Booker said it today that he feels confident in the young core that they have going forward, and he feels like they're starting to grow something. And that actually did show on the court. You can look at the 19-63 record and say otherwise, but we did see those stretches three different times during the season where they really looked like they were figuring it out as a group collectively. So from that standpoint, I think it's there, and I'm pleased overall with the way the season went, all things considered. And I think there has to be a couple asterisks on this team when you talk about them in that way. To look at it quickly from an individual standpoint before I swing it to you, Booker was great when he was 100% healthy. He was fantastic. I think we saw every bit of improvement out of him. DeAndre Ayton looked great. He also improved in areas where he needed to, especially defensively. He was just different in the last 3 months compared to the first 3 months, and offensively is where he grew the most, in my opinion. His individual game there is really flourishing. Mikal Bridges, I mean, if you've been watching, that's probably the guy who has noticeably improved the most on the roster from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. I think Melton showed some things there. Kelly Oubre, once he spent like a week and a half with the team, he just gelled in right away and started clicking. And of course, TJ Warren's 3-point shooting. Josh, I guess you can say his 3-point shooting in the second half of the year. So there are everyone improved in certain ways. And I think the most important thing is they figured out on the court how this is supposed to work. How does this whole picture go. There's still a point guard that needs to be in there. There's still a four man that needs to be in there, which we'll talk about in the coming weeks and where they need to address the roster, obviously. But they figured out with Booker and Ayton as the two guys and all these supporting cast members around them how this goes when they're winning. I think they figured that out at least, and that's important.
To me, the what I'm going to judge them on and judge Igor on too is how their best players did. I know that losing is not good, but we've harped on it before. The reason Devin Booker can be good and this team cannot win is it is age. Like that, you can say that's an excuse and it's tiring and it is, but until they find the right vets to put with them, they're not going to win. And that said, I think Devin Booker improved immensely. Like he keeps surprising by he hasn't hit a ceiling yet. He's 22. DeAndre Ayton just in one season, same thing where it's if I'm seeing him grow and then slowly add things into his game as he gets better at the basics, defense, rim protection, help defense, that kind of thing, that's good. That's reflects positively on the coaching staff to me. And that's why I think in the coming days, we worry about Igor. Like if they blow that up, even if the front office remains and the roster, that's learning another system. That's having to reset every single player. And if you're bringing back even the same guys, I'd worry that resetting the systems, the terminology, the expectations, all that kind of will set you back again. So I think he deserves at least another year.
He should not be fired before the end of his second year. I don't care if the locker room quits on him. I don't care. He should not be fired before the end of his second year.
I think the good thing about what we saw is that losing streak, and then they came out of it too. I think in the past, maybe in Phoenix, we just haven't had the ability to see teams come out of it on the other end. But that reflects well on the coaching staff too, where it looks like you've lost him the moment we thought he was going to get fired. Basically they responded and they kept it up, so to me that's he might have saved his job right there. That's no secret.
I don't think Igor is the guy to I guess end this on. I think that the player improvement, the way Bridges, Ayton, Melton, just the way guys have improved as a whole going into the end of the season is enough for him to deserve to be back next year. Obviously, there are parts as a coach where he needs to improve in his first year, but I think that it is going to be so much easier and just more natural for this team if they are able to start the same starting lineup for the first 15 games of the season. Like if they are able to, let's just say hypothetically, I was answering questions on Twitter the other day and someone asked me what's the best case plausible scenario for you for the offseason. I said re-signing Oubre and bringing in a four that's above average that can start. And of course, point guard, yada yada yada. I just think Tyler Johnson makes way too much money. They're not going to be able to move him, and he played well enough to the point where they'll be okay with him starting next year. So I think if you look at Johnson, Booker, Oubre, that four-man, let's just say it's Aaron Gordon and DeAndre Ayton. And then off the bench...
I don't think the Magic are training him.
I don't think so either, but I just needed a name.
Tobias Harris?
Sure. Yeah. Let's say Tobias Harris, who they don't have the money to pay for at all. And then off the bench, you've got Bridges, one of Jackson and Warren, Melton, and then... you fill in those last two spots, but that's like your core eight. If those are your core eight guys for the entire season and you can just have those eight guys be those eight guys for the first 20 to 25 games of the season, I think it is going to be so much easier for them, and I think they'll actually start out the year pretty well. I think they'll actually play 500 basketball for the first 20 to 25 games. That is my bold prediction that it will just be easy. It'll feel so much easier to them. All the rookies not in their rookie year anymore. Igor in his second year, but I think the most important thing is this is not the 16th point guard Devin Booker's played with in 2 weeks or whatever. This is not the same thing goes for Ayton too. Like, how is he supposed to get rhythm with anyone if everything's changing around him? Oubre is now past that grace period of getting himself acclimated and everything. You know what I mean? It's, I think they're in a really good spot to do that as long as the stability is there. And look, if they don't even get the power, if they all they do is re-sign Oubre and bring in like a bench guy or two, and Warren's the four, just don't shake it up too much. Or if you're going to shake it up, make it worth it. Don't trade TJ just for cap space and then sign. I guess if you trade TJ for cap space and sign Tobias Harris, for example, yeah, that's worth it for sure. But you know what I mean? Like, don't shake things up just to shake them up and move guys because you have to move them. If Josh moves, then you know he moves. It's you don't move him just to get him out of here and get value for him, is what I'm saying. Same thing with TJ. You have to, the moves have to make sense.
Yeah,
can't just move Trevor Ariza because he wants to get traded. You know what I mean? Enough of that crap. Yeah.
Well, what else are we at?
I don't know. Was there anything from exit interviews that stood out to you? I didn't really think so.
No, it was every end of the year thing has a different energy. This one, I think it was kind of steady, like what we've heard toward the end of this year. And I think that's kind of reflective of Igor too, where it's everything's just day by day. Like, they don't talk about great things ahead. They're very focused on the day-to-day, which hopefully ends well. But yeah, I think stability is kind of the key word at the end of the day with the Bauer hire, with if Igor stays, and with kind of a core group that at least has promise and two really good players. So I think that's where we're at the end of the season. But yeah, I don't know. I enjoyed this season a lot more than the ones where they had more wins with the last few years for some reason. I think it's because there was just more to grasp. There was Devin Booker's really fun to watch. DeAndre Ayton is like a big child who doesn't know how to use his superpowers type thing. Like, that's how I see it. Does that mean they'll be good? I don't know.
No, and me saying that, by the way, in the first 20 to 25 games and how simple it's going to be.
It's very contingent on things.
It's contingent on things, but I'm also not saying they're going to win 38 games next year, 34 if they have that roster or whatever. I just think that a lot of this has to factor into how extremely difficult this first 4 years was, and I think that was kind of what we saw out of Booker in that run when he got really hot. It was like, I'm finally healthy. I'm finally set with a certain amount of guys playing around me, you know? And I think that was just important to hit on before we left here. Next week, we will be getting into end-of-season awards, but we're also probably going to be talking about, this is just a guess, but Jeff Bauer, we're expected to be hired as VP of basketball operations. No one is reporting this, but I would be surprised if it did not end with James Jones being introduced as permanent general manager on the same day.
Yeah.
And whenever they are introduced, we'll talk about that our next episode will be talking about that when we expect those people to be introduced. Again, I am not reporting anything. I am saying it is a logical explanation.
This is not the place to report things if you do.
Oh, man. Wouldn't that be something? Rate, review us. All that good stuff on all your platforms. And since everyone's been doing it on Twitter and all this kind of stuff, thank you for listening all season. It's weird saying that because I think you can say that once the offseason is over. Like, once free agency is kind of settled down, that's when you can say, all right, I'm going to Cancun for 6 weeks. See you guys later. Thanks. But like, we're just getting started here. We have a lot of draft stuff to talk about. The lottery is coming up in 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
I couldn't tell you.
I think it's middle of May, I want to say.
Yeah.
And then we're talking about the draft. And then, I mean, week after that is free agency and there's going to be trades and all that stuff. So, but with that in mind, thank you all for listening, but we're still going to be doing once a week up until free agency is settled down. That's our plan here. So we're not going anywhere. Hope you guys aren't either. And like I said, not going anywhere. So we'll be back next week. We'll talk to you then.